Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We are presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And man, it is weird, Chris. I was thinking about it now. We are now officially in uncharted territory, right? We are getting ready to start week 18 in the NFL season this year. We got the 17-game regular season, which means with the byes, we're now on week 18 here. Like, you get to this point at the end of the season, Chris. You played a long time. You're part of that Super Bowl team in New York here. What are the last few weeks of the season generally like from a preparation standpoint? Like, rules-wise, teams can't even do all that much pad hitting anymore, right?
No, not at all. And even if you could, I mean, you don't want your guys in pads. The regular season is a marathon. It's not a sprint. And when you get to the end of it, the majority of the work that you're doing is on the field is like walk through and just trying to go through the mental reps. All the other stuff is that's the stuff that gets highlighted, like being in the meeting rooms, going through the film review, guys making sure they take care of their bodies in the weight room. Like that's what the preparation consists of once you get into the latter months of the regular season. And now with week 18, it just puts, it highlights the importance of being able to be one of those teams at the top of the conference, having that one seed and getting that bye week, just because you know the state that guys are in terms of their bodies going through all of those games, all of those physical battles. Being able to have that extra bit of rest before you kick off your playoff run, that's a huge competitive edge that you're going to have. So for the Green Bay Packers and whoever the one seed in the AFC ends up being, most likely Tennessee, that's going to be a huge break that they get in terms of being able to go on a run in the postseason.
Yeah, I saw Aaron Rodgers when he was on with Eli and Peyton Manning last night with Monday Night Football talking about that dilemma that some of the one seeds face of do you start or do you rest your starters in that final game of the season here. And as Aaron Rodgers said, you know, the results of people are always going to poke holes in whatever you do. If you come out sluggish, they're going to say you should have played. And if you go out there and everyone looks great, they're going to say, of course, you should make sure guys are healthy. I think especially with this Green Bay team, there is no question with the injuries that they've had, rest is going to be the formula for that team going forward. But Chris, looking at Monday Night Football from last night, the game they were watching, pretty underwhelming, especially offensively here. Ben Roethlisberger does technically win this football game because somebody had to win it, throwing passes all under 3 yards more or less the entire game. But as we look at this big picture, last night was a rare moment where we got to see a player and an organization celebrate what had been an unbelievable run of success and service to that organization, Super Bowl victories, all those great things in there. I couldn't help but think in all of that, as former players, we love to see guys get that chance to finish out. We love to see an organization stick with a guy there. It's also weird because it kind of feels like getting to this point, the Steelers have made a mistake, because now going forward, there's no easy answer for a team that avoids a losing season yet again and makes sure that they're not in position to go out there and land his successor, who we don't believe is on the roster right now.
Well, Gojo, they boxed themselves in a corner when Kevin Colbert, their general manager, gave Ben Roethlisberger a 2-year, $68 million extension in the offseason of 2019. Like, at that point, they were committed to Ben Roethlisberger for the foreseeable, and what I mean by that, the next 2 or 3 years, because ultimately the contract was trying to push money into future cap years, but at some point, you're going to have to pay that bill. In this offseason, them reworking the contract was a part of the consequences for Colbert giving him such a deal. And so when I looked at the decision to move forward in that direction, Ben going into his age 37 season, knowing that he hasn't been a quarterback that's been known to take care of his body, and then being a quarterback that was dealing with an elbow injury in that season, you had to think that this was going to end terribly for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And so the results that we've seen is about what I expected. Since they signed him to that contract extension, the Steelers are 28-19-1, and they've got one playoff appearance and no playoff wins. That's not the return on investment they were looking for. Meanwhile, during that span, Ben Roethlisberger made $80 million. So that just goes to show you that the Steelers were throwing good money after bad, and they should have faced the reality a lot sooner that Ben Roethlisberger was closer to the end than everybody else in the fan base might have expected.
Yeah, lest we not forget either what I think is going to be one of the bigger mistakes in all of this, as great a player as he is, that first-round draft pick to bring Minka Fitzpatrick over from Miami is going to hang pretty, pretty high there up on the list of mistakes made towards the end of Ben Roethlisberger's tenure. But again, Chris, like, we always talk about, and they say there's no loyalty in sports. We see these teams disregard players all the time, even as fans chirp them about leaving in free agency or holding their feet to the flame on money. From the organization side, though, we're going to criticize them, understandably, because now going forward, there's no clear answer. How are teams supposed to navigate this? Because we've got the whole Green Bay situation as what appears to be the cautionary tale on the other side.
Well, you also have the cautionary tale in what happened with Eli Manning and the New York Giants in the 2017 season, where they lost 13 games, and then in 2018 decided to draft a running back with the second overall pick with Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson still on the board. And we're seeing how that played out for the New York Giants, having the worst record in the NFL since the start of the 2017 season. So I get it. It's a delicate balancing act, and Aaron Rodgers is, I think, the outlier to this. He's more the exception and not the rule, because you don't expect a guy in his late 30s to put together back-to-back potentially MVP seasons. But the reality is, I think that communication is paramount when it comes to being able to navigate these waters with legendary quarterbacks and guys at that position that are probably going to wear a gold jacket. You've got to over-communicate with them so they understand the plan for them at the twilight of their career, and also understanding the realities of where the franchise is at and knowing that they're going to eventually have to pass the baton. So I think that's the thing that you would look at with the Green Bay situation and say the slight miscalculation from their general manager's part is not telling Aaron Rodgers that they were going to draft a quarterback a couple of years ago in the first round. But I don't fault them for trying to think about what life after Aaron Rodgers is going to be. As you see what's happening with the Pittsburgh Steelers and what has happened to the New York Giants as the reasons why you want to make sure you have a succession plan in place.
Kane Angolo Jr. here on ESPN Radio. And we always recognize it's not that simple. Like, you saw the emotion from last night. This was Ben Roethlisberger talking after the game about his relationship with the city and the fans and all these things that get wrapped up in the way that we do this.
It's just, this is home, you know. I was born in Ohio, but I live here and I'll always be here. And these fans in this place, it means so much to me and my family, and always will. And I've always said that they're the best fans in all of sports, and I'll stick by that to the day I die. And to see all the signs and the jerseys and the towels, and to hear them cheer for me coming out of the tunnel, all that stuff, it just I don't know that I'll ever put it into words, and that's why I want to soak it. I wish I could bottle it and have it forever. But I will in here and in my mind.
Because, Chris, the other part of this is, if you're a Steelers fan, can you not sit here today and go, all right, we may have to flounder for a bit here, although, man, you have got the coach that seems to be able to demonstrate that he can get you to at least 500 no matter what, and has for my entire adult lifetime here made sure that there's no losing seasons in Pittsburgh. So you're well equipped on that front. Maybe in their minds, it is worth it to send a guy off who's helped you lift a couple more of those Lombardi trophies, all the success you've enjoyed. Maybe if you presented that as the option, said, hey, you can have all this and then you're going to have to figure it out after that, I'm pretty sure the Steelers and every other team in the NFL would take that gamble.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, Big Ben has delivered two championships to the organization, so I don't think anybody is going to look at it and say this ends up being a terrible deal for the franchise overall. But just looking at how they handled his tenure at the end of it, I feel like there's a couple of different ways that they could have gone to put themselves in better shape while still respecting what Ben has done for the organization and allowing him to have the opportunity to compete for that job. Now, that being said, I think life after Ben Roethlisberger is going to go down one of two roads. Either they're going to reach for a quarterback early on in the NFL draft, or you're talking about them potentially going big game hunting and looking at the quarterback market this offseason, the trade market at the quarterback position, and seeing if they can lure somebody like Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers potentially. I think that would be an intriguing landing spot for both of those guys, just because the organization has proven that they can be stable. They've got a championship caliber defense with young playmakers at all three levels. It seems like it's tailor-made for one of those guys to step in and be the difference between this team teetering on playoff contention and potentially competing for a championship.
I mean, listen, if you're a Steelers fan, maybe last night you weren't crying because of the emotion with Ben. You were crying because you think you were watching your future quarterback and Aaron Rodgers watch this game with Peyton and Eli and look back at that video of him and Mike Tomlin very clearly flirting during the Packers and Green Bay, and the Packers and Steelers game earlier. But I digress. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You can get in touch with us on the future in the AFC North. But coming up next, the Pittsburgh Steelers may be getting ready to start their future. Why one other AFC North team may be getting to start their future at the quarterback position a little sooner than we expected. Next on ESPN Radio.
Sports Radio, ESPN.
Hello, everybody. I'm Chris Berman, and welcome aboard to the ESPN Radio Network.
30 years and counting. This is ESPN Radio. This is ESPN Radio.
All right, so we all knew it went bad for Baker Mayfield last night on Monday Night Football. Certainly not breaking any news to you guys there. We saw the Cleveland Browns quarterback get sacked 9 times overall on the evening in a game where he had at one point 10 straight incompletions. But I didn't realize it had gone this bad. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. Because Chris, earlier in the show, we talked to our buddy Aaron Goldhammer from ESPN Cleveland. And you and I were both pretty stunned when he came by and said this about Baker Mayfield and his future with the Cleveland Browns.
Well, I think Baker has played his last game as a Brown. So I don't even think this is about competition. I think that he's just toast. In part because I think the Browns are ready to move on, and in part because I think he wants a change of scenery, which I think you'll see that take place here over the course of the next couple of weeks. So then the Browns have to come up with a better answer. And my guess is, guys, it'll come from one of two places. Now, the draft thing is really dicey this year. The Browns could end up with a top 10 pick, but there are no top 10 quarterbacks in this draft, I don't think. And I think what's most likely is there's a second tier of guys that come available in the Derek Carr, Matt Ryan conversation. And I would bet on one of those guys being the starting quarterback of the Browns next year.
Now, Baker Mayfield getting out of Cleveland would certainly be breaking moves.
Breaking Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to LinkedIn.com/sports.
But Chris, how realistic do you think that actually is?
Yeah, I just don't understand why the Cleveland Browns would move on from him, especially with a very manageable cap number going into his fifth year. I think the number is something like $18 million. So if you have the stomach for it, I think you create a quarterback competition with a veteran that you decide to bring in this offseason and you let it play itself out. I don't know that you want to cut ties with the guy. I mean, the organization, although it's not this regime, did invest the number one overall pick in this guy in 2018. So it would seem like you would try to give yourself every opportunity to make the right evaluation on his performance. And we all know this year his production was impacted by the injury to his non-throwing shoulder. So I think it's a little bit hasty to move off of Baker Mayfield now. Where I will raise a concern is how does the rest of the organization feel about him, particularly the guys in the locker room, because in the wake of that OBJ drama that led to the team releasing the diva wide receiver, like you heard some grumblings from players in that locker room that there might have been some merit to some of the concerns that OBJ and his camp had raised before he was on his way out of the door. So I would be curious to know how the locker room, how the team feels about him. And if you're in the front office, I would govern myself accordingly based on the information that I get back from those guys.
Yeah, and Chris, that is, I think, something that we would be able to know for sure based on if what Aaron said becomes true or not, right? Because we've seen Baker Mayfield's had success under two different coaching regimes here in Cleveland, right? He broke Peyton Manning's rookie touchdown record his first year there with Hugh Jackson, and then Freddie Kitchens taking over. And then last year under Kevin Stefanski in year one in a pandemic season, he was able to go out there and lead that team to the playoff run that he had here. So if they really got to a point where both Baker Mayfield and the Browns were ready to move on, Chris, that would tell me that all these rumblings we heard behind the scene, all the things we thought about Baker Mayfield saying in interviews, got to mend some relationships inside the building, all the players making comments about OBJ leaving, that was really just the tip of the iceberg, and that it had to get markedly worse this season for it to get to that point for them to move on.
Gojo, here's what I don't understand, though. Goldhammer said that Baker Mayfield might be ready for a change. When the organization openly sides with you by cutting a player that has been openly critical of your performance, wouldn't you think that you would want to repay that organization in kind with loyalty? I don't understand why Baker wants to move on so quickly. Is there going to be any organization around the National Football League that's going to be more inclined to be loyal to their quarterback than the Cleveland Browns, who had drafted Baker with the number one overall pick? That part about it doesn't make sense to me. Like, this dude fumbled the bag in epic proportions. Because remember, earlier in the year, we heard the rumors that the Cleveland Browns had an offer on Baker Mayfield's desk, paying him in the high 30s on average annual value on a contract extension for him, and he turned that down. Like, this is a guy that decided he wanted to bet on himself. And turning down $30-plus million on average annual value, you better damn well be right when you make that type of decision, and it's failed to epic proportions. So I just don't understand why Baker Mayfield has a beef with the Cleveland Browns organization as a whole when they've done everything that they can to support him and try to groom him into being their long-term answer at the quarterback position.
Oh, Chris, I would agree it wouldn't make sense, but we know Baker Mayfield's a fiery guy. Baker Mayfield is a guy that has an overwhelming amount of confidence in him, and he's also a guy that we've seen be a little bit critical of his head coach at times, right? Even after this game. I saw this quote from Jake Trotter, our ESPN, one of the guys covering the Browns for us here at ESPN, and he said, quote, Baker Mayfield criticized the game plan that isolated rookie offensive tackle James Hudson against T.J. Watt for much of the game. This is the quote from Baker Mayfield. When you've got T.J. Watt over there and you're not giving our rookie tackle a whole lot of help, it's not going to be good. Like, clearly all's not well with that relationship between player and head coach. If those conversations, because Chris, those conversations happen behind closed doors all the time. If you got two guys that really respect each other, this is grown man ball. You can go in there and have it out here. But for it to be leaking out again, another one of these relationships getting put on Main Street, that to me indicates that, again, it's got to be pretty bad if it's getting out to us.
But he's putting everybody in the organization on blast and not taking any accountability for the way that he's playing, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's the part that I have an issue with. The only things that we're hearing from him regarding his performance is that he's pretty banged up. He's dealing with a lot of different injuries. He's not healthy. Like, he's got to make the best decision for his future. He's got to get with his family and discuss whether it makes sense for him to play against the Bengals in Week 18. He's not talking about the misreads that he had throughout the game last night, which were pointed out during the Manning broadcast on ESPN2, he's not talking about the fact that the Pittsburgh Steelers were in base defense where most teams would be in nickel and dime because they didn't respect the passing attack from the Cleveland Browns, knowing that Baker Mayfield was the trigger man. He's not bringing up any of those things. He's talking about what everybody else in the organization is doing and not focusing on the things that he needs to do to improve. Gojo, that's not a sign of positive leadership. That's not what you want your franchise quarterback to do. You don't want a guy at the helm with that type of disposition, but that's where the Cleveland Browns find themselves. And so the decision that Andrew Berry has to make is not only one when it comes to on-the-field evaluation, but also the intangibles that Baker Mayfield is bringing to the table, knowing that he's an extension of management and ownership.
There's going to be a lot to sort out with Baker Mayfield for that reason here. The expected CEO of the franchise at the quarterback position cannot be this consistently messy. And we've seen Baker Mayfield's been great when things are going well, but now that there was expectations this season and when his foundation got cracked physically, we have seen some of this start to falter. Plenty more on that, but coming up next, as we get ready for the postseason, one of the hottest teams in football right now, maybe getting its best player back just in time for the big dance. We'll get to that after Chris Canty tells you about the man in the arena.
Yeah, I got to do it, Gojo. You know this is my favorite podcast and my favorite docuseries on ESPN+. I couldn't help but think when watching the Manning cast and they had Aaron Rodgers on there, they asked him about the moment where A-Rod broke Brett Favre's touchdown record, and he's now at 447 career passing touchdowns, putting him 174 touchdowns behind Tom Brady at 6'10", 21. I'm just saying, that's real GOAT talk. But join Gautam Chopra as he explores what Tom Brady has meant to football and the world in The Man in the Arena, a new podcast from ESPN Plus and Religion of Sports. A companion piece to Gotham's ESPN Plus docuseries, this 10-part podcast examines the improbable ripple effects of Brady's career. Things that have forced us to rethink everything we thought we knew about time, hatred, perfection, even fate. This podcast is brought to you by State Farm, ZipRecruiter, and Rocket Mortgage. Listen and follow Man in the Arena now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and stream the docuseries on ESPN+. You're listening to Canty and Golic Jr., ESPN Radio, back after this.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And we've had so much conversation today about Baker Mayfield, about Ben Roethlisberger, some of the young quarterbacks going on. Time we branch out a little bit. For more help on that, our ESPN NFL reporter, Diana Russini, joins us now on the Goodyear Hotline. And I told you, Diana, in 2021, that we were going to be having you on the show a lot more. 2022 already delivering on that. So new year, new me is off to a very good start. How are you, buddy?
Oh, Mike, I was thinking the same thing. I go, look at this. The calendar changes, and here I am back in the lineup. I'm back playing my starting role on your show. So it's good to be here. What a day of news you've got and all these great conversations I've been listening to you guys, but hopefully we got a little bit more good stuff to talk about here.
Well, I think we do, Diana. We just heard in the SportsCenter update there that something you had reported here, the current one seed in the AFC, Tennessee Titans, slated to get Derrick Henry back at practice tomorrow. Now, how close are we actually to seeing the best player on this team potentially back out there playing for them?
Yeah, let me give you some backstory. I know the organization, and I know Derek specifically, really had this game earmarked as this was going to be the return of Derek. And while the surgery earlier in November went really well, so did the rehab. You know, the thought process is they want to make sure he's 100%. There's really no reason to push it. We know that if they beat the Houston Texans, they're going to lock up that number one seed in the AFC, and of course they're going to want that first round bye, but you know, it's sort of looking at it as, is it worth the risk, though, of perhaps a re-injuring that foot? But that doesn't seem to be the case in terms of what I can gather. I don't get the sense that he's going to be playing in this game. I get the sense that he's back at practice as just another step towards his return for the playoffs. And, you know, last week he was running on the grass in cleats, which, you know, sounds very basic and simple, but that's, of course, a good sign. And then he's expected to be back at practice tomorrow. Obviously, we know that we don't necessarily know how hard he's going to go, but just the fact that he's going to have an appearance there, that's nothing just but good news for Titans.
Diana, revisiting the Antonio Brown meltdown at MetLife Stadium on Sunday. After the game, Bruce Arians made it clear that Antonio Brown would no longer be a part of that team. 2 days later, in a Brooklyn Nets game, we're talking about Antonio Brown still not being released by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So what exactly is Tampa's plan as to how they're going to deal with AB?
Oh, I wish I know. I spoke to some sources this morning trying to figure out what the plan is. And the people I talked to there just said we can't get into that right now, which I don't want to say that that's a common answer I get, because it's not when I talk to Tampa. They're usually pretty good about helping out with some information, and they're just shutting it down in terms of what they're actually doing, because we're all waiting for that waiver, or at least a wire, to come out around 4 o'clock every day. And obviously we saw today he is not on it. So if he's not a Buck anymore, what is the plan? And of course there's all the theories that I'm sure you guys have discussed on the show. And if you haven't, you probably will, which is, you know, it's nobody wants to see their ex with someone new. So perhaps that's the same theory that the Bucks have right now, which is, if they don't cut him and they can just find a way to suspend him, then he's still a Tampa Bay Buck technically, but he just won't play and no other playoff team can sign him, which I think that's the bigger story in a way, guys. Just the fact that there's a chance another team could sign him and the Bucks think that and feel that. I mean, that goes to show you how forgiving this league is and how much they really don't care if a player has the talent that AB has.
Talent always wins, as we're talking to ESPN NFL reporter Diana Russini on the Goodyear Hotline. Speaking of information about the Bucs, though, here, we've talked about running backs coming back. How soon can we expect Leonard Fournette to be back in this lineup during this important stretch?
Yeah, so if you guys remember, Leonard Fournette had a hamstring situation after that Saints game. So he was placed on IR on December 23rd, and the way the rule goes, he's got to be out for 3 games. So this Sunday would be 3 games. So for the regular season, we're not going to be seeing the running back. But the postseason, in terms of what I can gather, talking to the Bucks this morning about his status, they feel really good. He's going to be back. You know, they feel optimistic that he's healed and he should be good to go. And that time, obviously, recovering is helping him out because he should be good.
Diana, we got the news that Baker Mayfield's going to be out in Week 18 in the Browns matchup against the Bengals. What do you think the plan is for the Browns moving forward with Baker Mayfield?
So the sense I was getting at the midway mark, so let me start there, from the Browns organization, I felt just from conversations, this isn't one person just telling me this is what we're doing. This is just talking to decision makers there and talking to people on that staff, that they were into Baker. And so I had been operating pretty much the rest of the season thinking Baker is going to be back there. I haven't revisited any of those conversations recently. I was in Cleveland. I did talk to some people about Baker overall, and the tone I was getting at the time wasn't great. It didn't feel like this guy's our future. It wasn't said to me, but I didn't get that feel. You know, but look, this could be something where they keep him and they just don't pay him as much as you would expect the number one overall pick should be getting. But you guys listened in enough to the post-game quotes, or at least sound, and it didn't really sound like Kevin Stefanski, who isn't going anywhere, is on the same page with Baker Mayfield at this point. So I think we could all agree that it wouldn't be shocking if Cleveland did move on.
Certainly a messy situation in Cleveland that just continues to get messier after they had found something here. All good and all smiles on this show, though, because we get to start off 2022 with the best there is, Diana Russini, our ESPN NFL reporter. Diana, thanks so much. We will talk to you again very soon, like I promised, buddy.
Thank you. If you can call me the best there is every time we talk, I will come on this show every day. And you know what? I'll come in and host with you one day even, Mike. So thank you for that, guys. It was awesome talking to you and catching up.
See, there we go. Diana Russini coming in and co-hosting. Three Wide with Diana. That would be a hell of a show, Chris. I've gotten to work with Diana before. If we can coax out her very well put together impression that her mother does screening callers, I promise we are going to have the time of our lives. One of the best call screeners ESPN has.
Well, listen, I know Diana is from the tri-state area, so I'm all aboard with having her on as much as we possibly can, even co-hosting with us. I'm all about that.
Coming up next, though, someone who's all about the smoke, why one person in college basketball said, if you're going to come for the king, you best not miss. We will get to that next here on ESPN Radio.
Sports Radio, ESPN.
Hello, everybody. I'm Chris Berman, and welcome aboard to the ESPN Radio Network.
30 years and counting. This is ESPN Radio. This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Our thanks to ESPN NFL reporter Diana Russini and ESPN Cleveland's very own Aaron Goldhammer. If you missed any of those conversations about Baker Mayfield's future, about a couple of big-time running backs coming back for the postseason, download, subscribe, and follow the Canty and Golic Jr. podcast. But, Chris, we got some good old-fashioned beef right now. Now, for anyone that's followed women's college basketball for any stretch of time, and Lord knows for me, growing up a Notre Dame fan in UConn country, I was more than well acquainted with Muffet McGraw, Notre Dame's former head coach, who currently has done great work at the ACC Network here and has been such a great voice in women's college basketball for years. Her and Gino Auriemma, the head coach at UConn, don't necessarily get along. I think that's putting it.
That's an understatement.
Maybe the understatement of the century here. But that rivalry is one that has certainly spanned my entire lifetime as a basketball fan. I've gotten to watch it up close and personal. And we know UConn has largely dominated all of the women's college basketball space in the 2000s and beyond. Muffet McGraw went on the Off the Looking Glass podcast with Kate Fagan and Jess Matana a while back and talked about UConn's outsized influence on women's basketball. McGraw went on to say that UConn has done great things. They've won more than anybody else except Tennessee. What they've done has been amazing. I think people measure their team by them. We joined the Big East, and we were like, we want to get to where they are. That's where they want to be. We're trying to emulate them. She went on to say, but I think it goes over the top with ESPN. That's Connecticut's network. Notre Dame has NBC, Connecticut has ESPN. That is absolutely complete bias there. So, strong comments from Muffet McGraw. woman who I love dearly, who, again, gave me the ability to come out here when she won that first championship with Ruth Riley and company in the early 2000s and allowed me to peacock all over my elementary school and let everybody know what was really good. I am forever indebted to Muffet for that and more. Gino Auriemma did not hold back when he talked about the bias that was accused of his UConn Huskies receiving.
Yeah, I guess Muffet's bored. You know, I guess she doesn't have a whole lot to talk about. And usually when she was coaching, when she did talk, nobody listened anyway. So I guess you figure she's got a platform now. But I just think it's interesting that, you know, when people say there's a bias between us and ESPN, you know, we started getting on ESPN in 1995 when no one else would play. And we played in the Martin Luther King game. And we've been on ESPN a lot. You know, there are a lot of other schools within proximity to ESPN. I don't think the bias has anything to do with where ESPN is located or where UConn is located. I think the bias has something to do, if there is any, with the 11 national championships, which is a lot more than two.
Good Lord, man.
Wow, he flamed Muffet McGraw to epic proportions on this one. And listen, nobody's going to make the argument that the ESPN coverage doesn't help what UConn is doing as far as their recruiting goes, as far as them being able to develop their program into the juggernaut that it is in women's college basketball. But I don't know, man. I think Gino went a little too hard on Coach McGraw, man. He went in a little too far. It's not like she didn't give him his flowers and didn't talk about the great job that he did at the program. I didn't understand why he had to take it there and make it sound so personal when breaking down her assessment or her analysis of what she thought could potentially be an advantage that the UConn women's basketball program has.
Yeah, well, Chris, he didn't have to make it sound personal. It is personal. Like, with those two, it's always felt personal over the years. I'd say this. I disagreed with Muffet's comments about there being a bias in all this, right? I can understand where it comes from on her side. But the way this tends to go, this is like being like saying that ESPN has an Alabama football bias. Like, they just happen to be the one standing at the end of most seasons here. That's kind of how things have gone. I understand the media can play an influence in a lot of these things, and that where we point the camera and coverage certainly does matter. But I thought that was a shot that probably wasn't worth taking there. That being said, I think you're right. And I saw Jordan Cornette, another proud Notre Dame basketball alum who was on with his wife Shay on Sports Nation. The part that got me was having to go at and say, Muffet McGraw, no one listened to her when she was a coach, or no one listens to her now. Like, Muffet McGraw as a voice, not only for women's basketball, but for women, period, and what that's meant has been outsized. We all remember what she said and what she had to talk about during the women's tournament years ago near the end of her tenure about the importance of getting women into coaching, getting women into these fields where so far the impact has been largely dominated by men. Like, Muffet as a voice in that sport, you cannot question. So if I'm going to say that I disagree with Muffet bringing up the bias as part of attributing Gino's success to that, I would disagree as strongly, if not more, with Gino trying to take the shot and say people didn't give a damn about what Muffet McGraw had to say, because that just ain't true.
Yeah, here's the thing. Muffet's McGraw's analysis wasn't disrespectful to Gino Auriemma. Gino Auriemma's response to it was absolutely disrespectful. And there, you would think there would be a certain level of decorum that you would have when addressing another fellow coach, and then somebody that has transitioned on into being an analyst on one of the largest sports network in the country. It just doesn't seem like that was something that he needed to do necessarily in order to dispute what she was saying about the ESPN bias toward the UConn program. I just felt like it was a completely unnecessary shot that he took at her. And in this situation, I don't know that you could be in a position to question her acumen when it comes to being able to break down the sport. You can disagree with her opinion about the coverage of the team, but I didn't think it was fair that he took shots at her the way that he did.
No, I think, man, listen, if you want to get into it and go big bank takes little bank and say 11 titles is more than two and do all that ring counting, I'm good with that. But again, to attack the legacy that Coach McGraw has left behind on this sport and continues to add to in this sport, that ain't it now, and that probably ain't ever going to be it there. So that's some beef that we saw on the court with Muffet McGraw and Gino Auriemma spilling over into the media here. Coming up next, though, as we look ahead into the world of college athletics, for now, Jim Harbaugh and the Michigan Wolverines just finished up the best season in his tenure. Is there a chance that it could be the last season in his tenure there? We'll answer that next here, Canty and Golic Jr., ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.